Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show from my flagship station, WSB in Atlanta, Georgia, beamed out via satellite across the country. I hope it's grand and glorious wherever you are. The phone number, if you want to be on the show, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. And we got to begin this hour in Georgia. It's made national news and will impact and reverberate across the nation over the next year. President Donald Trump was in Perry, Georgia on Saturday, about 30, 40 minutes south of my house. And he all but endorsed Stacey Abrams for governor. Now, this is one of those times, I think, where Donald Trump supporters would say they take him seriously, not literally. They know he wants Brian Kemp beaten, but don't take him literally about wanting Stacey Abrams. What he said of Abrams is having her, I think, might be better than having your existing governor. It might very well be better. He then said, Stacey, would you like to take his place? It's okay with me. Those are Donald Trump's words, not mine. Now, there are some implications here, and follow along with me. And I realize I've got listeners out of Georgia now, but this relates to all of you, particularly because we're seeing this shape up in places like Arizona as well with President Trump. David Schaefer, the chairman of the Republican Party in Georgia, was at the event. It was an event to highlight three candidates in primaries. My friend Jody Heiss, who's running for Secretary of State. Burt Jones, who's running for Lieutenant Governor. And Herschel Walker, who's running for the Senate. It is notable that the chairman of the Republican Party was there for two reasons. One, it was an event designed to bolster the primary candidacies of three people, and the party chair is supposed to remain neutral in primaries. And two, the chairman of the party has not said anything about Donald Trump, saying he would prefer Stacey Abrams to the incumbent Republican Governor Brian Kemp. Where is the state party defending Brian Kemp? Why will the state party say nothing? And therein gets you one of the problems for the GOP in Georgia. The state party and the state Republicans have not for some time seen eye to eye. And you have an effort now among Republicans in the state legislature and the governor to set up separate funds for them to be able to control their own campaigns because they have no faith in the state party and its chairman, who they see as operating an agenda unique to himself and not even for the good of the party overall. You also have the situation of Trump trying to get some of the fringe of the GOP to not back Trump and in an all-hands-on-deck matter. Now, you need to know, I'll cut to the chase here and get to this point, the crowd was not receptive to the idea of Stacey Abrams. They get that Donald Trump does not like Brian Kemp. He also lashed out at Chris Carr, the popular Republican attorney general in Georgia, for not doing enough. What you nationally need to know is that the Georgia Constitution prohibits the governor of the state from doing anything in an election. And had the governor called a special session, as President Trump supporters say on their fallback, when they're pushed on this point, that the governor in Georgia can't do anything in elections at all, ever. He's prohibited. They say, well, he could have called a special session and changed the rules, except there is well-settled Supreme Court precedent that if the rules were changed, they would not go in effect for a runoff. There are numerous Supreme Court cases in Georgia and nationally with the U.S. Supreme Court that if you have an election and then a runoff and you have a special session of the legislature that changes election rules between the two, those rules can't affect the runoff. So it wouldn't have mattered. It would have been a waste of taxpayer dollars. They would have been able not to change the rules. Do you really believe John Roberts would have allowed it, really? So there was nothing Kemp could have done, but that doesn't stop Donald Trump from going after him. Now, I'm told reliably that both Sonny Perdue and David Perdue have told President Trump to lay off Brian Kemp. Republicans in Georgia do not want to help Stacey Abrams get a win. They do not want her to get elected. Abrams is already openly talking about she wants to run for president. You don't run for president as a nobody. I granted most Democrats think she already won the governorship in Georgia, but she didn't. She needs something, and she's going to run against Kemp in 2022. Trump is trying to find someone to run against Brian Kemp. It's really freaking notable that there is a candidate running against Brian Kemp. His name is Vernon Jones. He's a pro-abortion Democrat who flipped a switch earlier this year and suddenly became a pro-life Republican. And even Donald Trump, who says he would prefer Stacey Abrams to Brian Kemp, is refusing to endorse Vernon Jones. That tells you everything you need to know about the candidacy of Vernon Jones. But then there's the Herschel Walker situation. Republicans, you should know, are starting to calm down about the Herschel Walker situation. Let me read you from National Journal why. This is from Josh Krashauer. The midterms are more than a year away, giving President Biden and Democrats plenty of time to recover from their summer doldrums. But with Biden's job approval down to the low to mid-40s, Democrats haven't fully grappled with the consequences of a true backlash election rather than simply the typical first-term setbacks of a party in power. Democrats often sound resigned to losing the House given the combination of their narrow majority, redistricting, and historic midterm patterns. That fatalism can be seen in their effort to jam as much government spending as possible into Biden's first year in office, anticipating this may be their last chance to do so. Democrats have been oblivious, however, to the true political cost of pushing through the $3.5 trillion legislation championed by progressives, lacking the imagination to anticipate the downside of pushing well beyond their political mandate. It's not just the House, it's the Senate, the Supreme Court, and the caliber of elected officials at stake. The difference between an average midterm setback and a Republican wave means control of the Senate and the ability to replace Stephen Breyer. The difference between Biden's approval hovering around 50 versus dipping to low 40s means politically capable Democratic moderates losing to Trumpist Republicans in unlikely places. A GOP landslide may even encourage Trump to run again in 2024. The early conventional wisdom was that while Republicans are favored to win the House, Democrats hold a decided advantage of the Senate. The biggest roadblock for Republicans has always been that several of their prospective nominees are Trump loyalists, unlikely to be ready for political primetime. They include Herschel Walker in Georgia, Ted Budd in North Carolina, Sean Parnell in Pennsylvania. But in Republican waves, even weak candidates get pushed to the finish line because they're able to take advantage of a GOP-friendly political environment. Republicans would have favorable odds in any slightly red state on the map like North Carolina and Georgia. All of Herschel Walker's baggage won't matter as much if disaffected Georgia voters want to send a political message to the White House. Democrats' outside opportunity in Ohio, thanks to a solid recruit and a crop of hard right Republican candidates, would dissipate. In GOP trending Florida, Marco Rubio would lock down another term, even though he's running against a top Democrat recruit, Val Demming, who's already raised millions. Meanwhile, bluer swing states like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania would tilt toward Republicans, giving Democrats longer odds against Trump-aligned candidates. If the politically adept Connor Lamb wins the Democratic nomination, he'd be the early favorite to flip Pennsylvania blue, but if Biden can't reverse his political fortunes, all bets are off. Remember, Lamb won his re-election in a suburban Pittsburgh district by only 2 points against Sean Parnell, and Parnell looks like he'll be the nominee for the GOP in Pennsylvania. Republicans are concerned that Donald Trump's picks are people who say glowing things about Donald Trump and maybe aren't the best candidates for their state. They say that about Herschel Walker, who moved away to Texas and only just moved back to run for the Senate, who's got a lot of baggage. But does it really matter? He's Herschel Walker. I saw an internal poll the other day that if the election were held today, 75% of Republicans would vote for Herschel Walker in a primary. He's being combated by Kelvin King, who was the black businessman who started Black Voters for Trump in Atlanta, who didn't get Trump's endorsement, unfortunately. He's a great guy. He's being also primaried by Gary Black, the agriculture commissioner in Georgia, who has a long track record and is actually going after Herschel very friendly but very directly, saying, I'm not the guy you want on the football field, and Herschel's not the guy you want creating jobs. He's great on the football field. I'm great at creating jobs. He's the ag commissioner, loved by farmers in South Georgia. Then there's Latham Sadler, who is a young candidate who was taught himself the Afghan language, joined the SEALs, and hiked through Afghanistan, helping the U.S. military. It's really a compelling story. He's been on the program talking about Afghanistan. And those candidates aren't going to give Herschel Walker a pass. They may not get in the gutter with the baggage, and consequently, they may not win. But they're doing their best because they think they would be better in the general against Raphael Warnock, who is far left progressive, but it strikes people as a very affable, likable guy. They pay attention to him, not his record. And that's something Republicans have to remember, is you got to pay attention to the people, not just the record. When you have Trump in Georgia going after Brian Kemp and also now Chris Carr, the attorney general, he's going after the current lieutenant governor who's not running again, Jeff Duncan, and the current secretary of state, Georgia, Brad Raffensperger, who is running. I'm not sure can win re-election in the primary given the situation. You open the floodgate for people to come in and divide the party at a time that Georgia is drifting blue, it seems, and they need to hold everything together. And the president seems to be making it about himself, not his agenda. And that's the thing that I think frustrates a lot of Republicans. Whether you look at President Trump in Arizona, refusing to back the attorney general out there, whether you look at him in Georgia, whether you look at him in a place like Ohio and others, the president is backing candidates who have the president's back, and those candidates may not be the candidates most likely to be able to win in order to have the president's agenda. And President Trump, it seems, has decided to make this a race about having his back and being loyal to him and not necessarily to his agenda. In fact, I mean, for example, in Wyoming, President Trump is backing a candidate against Liz Cheney. In 2016, the candidate that Donald Trump is backing worked overtime to try to sabotage his nomination at the Republican convention. She actually tried to organize a coup at the Republican convention in 2016 to stop Trump. And now, because she says great things to him in person, he's backing her. I do think part of this is the president gets bad advice from people who he has set himself up to be someone who, if you say nice things to him in person, he tends to believe that you like him. And several of the candidates he has thrown his support to are people who have been trying to sabotage him behind the scenes, or at least in 2016, or even up until they suddenly had like public conversions of faith, where they would say nice things about him in public, but still undermine him in private. And the president's okay if they badmouth him in private, so long as they say nice things about him in public. But those people will not advance his agenda. So it seems to be about him, not what he stands for. And I don't know that that gives the president clarity or the voters clarity about president running in 2024. What I do know is that if he picks candidates who cannot win in 2022, the Republican voters themselves will probably have a backlash against Trump having picked candidates who cost them the Senate. So he, they, and everyone needs to be careful how they maneuver moving forward. It's just, it's a very interesting dynamic. But what is most interesting here in Georgia is that the state Republican Party has yet to issue a statement defending Brian Kemp. And second, has yet to come out and say that they're not taking sides in primaries. And also, probably most significantly, the Republican voters of Georgia don't seem to agree with the president on taking Stacey Abrams. In fact, when President Trump said that, "Stacey, would you like to take his place? It's okay with me," a man next to the stage yelled back, "We don't want her, Mr. President." And they don't seem to. Will President Trump get that message? Time will tell. If you are a regular listener of this here program, you know my quest for the perfect mattress. I finally found one after multiple iterations. And then, of course, you got to get the perfect sheets to go with the mattress. I mean, you need quality sheets. Well, that's why Bull & Branch is right for you. You know, there's a great, great, great company out there. They're highly entrepreneurial, and they make high-quality sheets, the highest quality. It makes the world a better place when you're sleeping under high-quality sheets on a great mattress, and you need Bull & Branch to go with your mattress. They are soft. They've got that weighted feel, but they're also very, very soft. They're very comfortable. You sleep cool, but you also feel like you have something on you. Like, I can't sleep in super light sheets, and the Bowl and Branch, they are the perfect purpose balance. My wife loves them. I love them. They're super soft. They're high quality. And you know what? You'll sleep well at night with them. You'll also, you know, for some reason, the Bowl and Branch, it's the sheen on them there. You don't get tangled up in the covers at night, which is also great. So I highly recommend Bowl and Branch. You can try them worry-free for 30 nights if you don't believe me. You get free shipping and returns. Now, my listeners get 15% off your first set of sheets with promo code Eric, E-R-I-C-K, at bowlandbranch.com. That's Bowl and Branch, B-O-L-L, and branch.com. The promo code is Eric. Sleep comfortably with Bowl and Branch. You won't get tangled up under the covers. They give you a little weight. They're the perfect set of sheets to go with your mattress. I will tell you something I haven't been able to find. Any Republican in Georgia who would rather Stacey Abrams, I can't. Those people, I'm sure they exist, and I'm sure they're the type of people you would expect them to be, but I can't actually find any of them. You should also know that on top of all of this is redistricting coming. Texas has released its maps, and the Texas maps look good for the GOP. I mean, they may be able to actually take back Congress with just the Texas maps. Texas, keep in mind, is picking up two seats. And it's looking like those seats, it's going to be 25 Republicans, 13 Democrats, up from 23 Republicans, 13 Democrats today. So I'm looking at some of these. So Texas, for example, Texas 38 went for Trump, would have gone for Trump 18. That's pretty significant. One of the ones that won't change terribly is my buddy Chip Roy, who his district, it largely stays the same partisan makeup. It's a pretty swingy district. He's a good dude. But it's not only them. The Democrats are doing as well. You know, hilariously, the New York Times ran a story the other day that Democrats are beginning to embrace that Republican tool, gerrymandering. Gerrymandering is named for Eldridge Gerry, the Democrat governor of Massachusetts. Yeah, or was he speaker? I can't remember. He was a Democrat back in the day. And in the 2000s, it was the Democrats who notoriously gerrymandered, even states like Texas and Georgia. As Republicans were making gains, they did bizarre redistricting to keep the Republicans out. And they lost in courts one after another, and the GOP was able to take control. But the New York Times would have you pretend, would have you believe that redistricting is a Republican tool, that the Democrats have never gerrymandered. They're just pure as the driven snow. You can't even believe the New York Times anymore, the way it spins stuff and covers, which is disappointing because you always used to be able to believe the basics of their news coverage, even if their editorials were garbage and their framing was always liberal. Now you can't even believe the basic facts. I mean, like the horse whipping story in Texas, they're having to revise that. This is one of the most bizarre things I have seen. They're just now trying to rearrange stuff. Let me read you. This is from the original piece. The images of agents on horseback chasing and in some cases using the reins of their horses to strike at running migrants came up as Mr. Biden's administration moved to forcefully round up. Now they've changed it. Images of Border Patrol agents on horseback waving their reins while pushing migrants back. Here's the correction. An earlier version of this article overstated what is known about the behavior of some Border Patrol agents on horseback. While the agents waved their reins while pushing migrants back into the Rio Grande, the Times has not seen conclusive evidence that migrants were struck with the reins, which was thoroughly disproven before the New York Times even ran with the first story. And now they're having to walk back something that was debunked before their first take at it. But they don't care. Nobody will see the correction. They saw the original. Liberals now believe that the Border Patrol has been whipping migrants at the border. In the same way, liberals will believe that Democrats are only now resorting to gerrymandering because Republicans did it first, which is not true. The very first gerrymander was by a Democrat in this country back in the 1800s. And it goes on and on and on and on. But the bottom line on redistricting, though, is that Republicans do expect that even without redistricting, they could take back the House of Representatives. And with redistricting, they may be able to lock it in for a decade. You know, when I was a kid, the Democrats had controlled Congress for 40 nonstop years at the House of Representatives. And then Bill Clinton became president and the Democratic coalition began to break apart. And the Republicans were able to win back Congress for the first time in 40 years with Newt Gingrich as Speaker. And I wonder if the Democratic coalition is starting to break apart again, this time not necessarily along ideological lines, but along racial lines, with the minorities becoming Republicans.
If you've been behind the wheel of a high-performance sports car, you realize how much better a car can be. You never want to settle for a regular car again. I feel that way with my X-Chair. From the moment I first sat down in it and I understood how many consider X-Chair to be the finest office chair in the world, can your current office chair give you a massage while you're working? My X-Chair can, and as a guy in radio who sits in this chair for 3 hours a day, plus an additional 3 hours doing show prep, I can tell you it's worth it. It can also heat up. It can cool down. That's what my X-Chair can do. I bet yours can't. It's all the Elevax massage and temperature regulation, exclusively designed and made for X-Chair. Once you feel it, once you realize the difference, you're not going to go back. You're going to want one of these. Try X-Chair yourself, risk-free for 30 days. Once you realize how much better your chair can be, you're never going to go back. I promise, I didn't, and I had a really fancy chair, and then I got my X-Chair. There's no going back. Go to xchaireric.com now with the letter X, chair, E-R-I-C-K.com, for $100 off your order. X-Chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort. It's xchaireric.com. Hi there. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. We're going to go down the rabbit hole. We're going to talk about a story that should be getting attention, and it's not really getting the attention it deserves. And I got to give some credit where it's due to my friend Ryan, who strung these stories together for me when I saw one story and did not see the other story. And he was able to remind me of something that had happened. Friends, let's go in the Wayback Machine to 1995. On October 9, 1995, a passenger train, Amtrak's Sunset Limited, jumped the track, going 50 miles per hour, 60 miles southwest of Phoenix, Arizona. Four of the train's cars plunged more than 30 feet off a trestle into a dry riverbed. By the end of the incident, one person had been killed, 78 left injured. Investigators arrived on the scene and found the cause. Someone had sabotaged the tracks. Upon examining the crime scene, a total of 29 spikes had been removed. Not only were the 29 spikes found to have been removed, but whoever removed them had pushed the rails inside the tracks in question, meaning that the two rails were not connected. Furthermore, additional evidence suggested the saboteur was not an amateur. The signal circuits, the electrical wires that run through the track had been left intact, meaning the train crew had no way of knowing that there was a problem with the rails. Many similarities with the crash were soon connected with another eerily similar accident that occurred over a half century ago. When people asked about the earlier incident, a historian noted that in 1939, 24 people were killed and 117 left injured in another train accident that occurred in the Nevada desert. The most mysterious connection between the accidents is the fact that the sabotage was done ahead of a bridge in a desert country of remote location. There was definitely care in advance that the wires were intact at all times. Merely moving one piece of metal, in this case one rail, a matter of less than 4 inches, allowed both trains to careen off the curve as they crossed the river and the damage occurred. Even more bizarrely was that the story of the crash in 1939 had been published in a journal for train buffs only a short time before the Amtrak incident happened. Is it possible that there was a tie? The identity and the motive of the saboteur remain unknown to this day. The accident left one casualty, a car attendant named Mitchell Bates, who was sleeping at the time the accident occurred. That
It was in 1995. It is an unsolved crime. The story I read to you is from Nicole Hinley, published in December of 2018. And now we fast forward to August 2nd, 2021. This is the Associated Press. A Bellingham woman has pleaded guilty in federal court to a terrorist attack and violence against Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway in northwestern Washington that investigators have suggested was motivated by opposition to the construction of a natural gas pipeline across British Columbia. Samantha Francis Brooks and Ellen Brenham Ritchie, or Reish, were each indicted with one count of terrorist attacks and other violence against a railroad carrier December 9th, 2020, in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Washington in Seattle. They're accused of putting a shunt on tracks near Bellingham in late November. Such devices consist of a wire strung across the tracks, mimicking the electrical signal of a train. The device can cause trains to automatically brake and can disable railroad crossing guards, investigators have said. Brooks pleaded guilty July 9th, and a federal judge accepted her plea last week, the Bellingham Herald reported. In her plea agreement, Brooks admitted to helping another person install a shunt on the railroad tracks and that they acted with the intent to cause BNSF trains to delay operating. She faces a maximum prison sentence of 20 years, a fine of $250,000, and up to 3 years probation. The government agreed to recommend a sentence at the low end of sentencing range as part of her plea agreement. Reish pleaded not guilty in December and is scheduled to go to trial. In late November, BNSF police received a motion alert from a game camera just north of Bellingham and saw a person trespassing along the tracks. Deputies found Brooks and Reish in the area and they were detained for trespassing. Deputies later found a wire shunt between the tracks. They are environmentalists who oppose a pipeline. Now, there is a wreck in Montana. This is from this weekend. Federal investigators are seeking the cause of an Amtrak train derailment near a switch on tracks in the middle of vast farmland in far northern Montana that killed three people and left seven hospitalized over the weekend. The westbound Empire Builder was traveling from Chicago to Seattle when it left the tracks around 4 p.m. Saturday near Joplin, a town of about 200. Amtrak spokesman Jason Abrams said the train was carrying about 141 passengers and 16 crew members. It had two locomotives and 10 cars, eight of which derailed, with some tipping onto their sides. Trevor Fossen was first on the scene. The Joplin resident was on a dirt road near the track Saturday when he saw a wall of dust hundreds of feet high. I started looking at that, wondering what it was, and then I saw the train had tipped over and derailed. Fossen called 911 and started trying to get people out. He called his brother to bring ladders for people who couldn't get down after exiting through windows of cars resting on their side. Passenger Jacob Cordero from Rhode Island was traveling with his father to celebrate his college graduation. I was in one of the front cars, and we got badly jostled, thrown from one side of the train to the other. He said the train car left the tracks near a switch where two tracks narrow to one but did not fall over. I'm a pretty big guy, and it picked me up from my chair and threw me into the wall, then threw me into the other wall. Railroad safety expert David Clark said the two locomotives and two cars at the front of the train reached the switch and continued on the main track, but the remaining eight cars derailed. He said it was unclear whether some of the last cars moved on to the second track. Did the switch play a role? It might have, but the front of the train hit the switch and started fishtailing, and that flipped the back part of the train. It could be a defect in the rail. He said speed was not likely a factor. Alan Zimbersky of the University of Delaware's Railroad Engineering Safety Program said he didn't want to speculate, but suspected the derailment stemmed from an issue with the train track, equipment, or both. Railways have virtually eliminated major derailments by human error after the implementation of positive train control. Matt Jones, a BNSF railroad spokesman, said at a news conference that the track where the accident occurred was inspected Thursday. a 14-member National Transportation Safety Board team, including investigators and railroad signal specialists, were looking into the cause of the accident on the BNSF railway track, where someone just a few months ago on a different part of a BNSF railroad track, an environmental activist sabotaged a train track. We don't know. Some will, I'm sure, say it's too cavalier speculation. But all of this comes with this. The New Yorker has interviewed Andreas Malm. The author has written a book called How to Blow Up a Pipeline. He calls for activists to embrace violence. He says, this is his quote, "I am in favor of destroying machines, property. And I think property can be destroyed in all manner of ways, such as blowing up a pipeline." This guy has written a book. It's been covered in the New York Times as well. And in fact, Ezra Klein in the New York Times favorably covered it, that maybe the guy is onto something, except, well, it'll provoke a backlash. And that was the only reason Ezra Klein was concerned about what Malm wrote, that there might be a backlash from people if you start blowing up pipelines or sabotaging railroads. The FBI, the Biden administration, claimed that the biggest national security threat in this country is you, listeners of conservative talk radio, Trump supporters, Republicans, conservatives, Christians. Pay no attention to the environmental activist who has written a book encouraging people to start being violent in the name of global warming. Pay no attention to the rhetoric of the left right now that we have no time left. Within the next decade, we're all going to die because of global warming unless drastic action is taken. Pay no attention to the activists who earlier this year pled guilty to sabotaging a BNSF railroad track, causing a massive train derailment. Pay no attention to the fact that this weekend, on another section of BNSF track, another Amtrak train has gone off the rails for causes yet unknown, but most likely with the track that had been inspected last Thursday. Seems to be a pattern here. You know, what was his name? Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, was an environmentalist, activist, murderer, nut. You know, in the Northwest, there is the Earth Liberation Front, the ELF, which is a terrorist group of eco-activists. They have, one of my favorites is at one point they released a bunch of minks from a lab. They went in, broke into a lab, released a bunch of minks into the wild. The minks actually got onto a farm for endangered animals and killed all the animals. I thought that story had some bit of hilarious irony to it. They sabotage cars. They try to sabotage gas pipelines and gas stations. And yet it's white conservatives that the Biden administration is most concerned about. Now, I tie all of that to this story. This is a headline today in the Wall Street Journal. China's electricity curbs risk wider damage this time. Beijing's latest crackdown in the energy sector could go further than investors expect. Investors are used to periodic campaigns against energy-intensive sectors like steel and cement in China, but a new round of power cuts driven by Beijing's ambitious climate targets now threaten to do wider damage, particularly worrying some of China's most export-oriented dynamic provinces are among the worst energy guzzlers, according to Beijing. Many Chinese provinces have instituted electricity curbs, especially for energy-intensive businesses, creating further disruption as the economy is already weighed down by the property slowdown and rebounding COVID-19 cases. In Northern Europe, governments are already warning that there will be fuel shortages this winter. In Great Britain, there's actually a rush to buy winter fuel oil because the government is signaling that people may freeze this winter. We're expecting a cold winter, forecasters are. And because they've converted to wind and solar, they're afraid they won't be able to meet the demands. It'll be like a continental-wide version of what happened in Texas last winter. We have rushed and rushed and rushed to placate the Greens. We have gone back into the dark ages energy-wise as a result, and still they are not placated. And now they're advocating terrorism. They're advocating the destruction of pipelines. And just 2 months ago, a group of women pled guilty or will face trial for eco-terrorism related to a pipeline. And now another Amtrak train has gone off the rails of another BNSF rail line. Are they connected? I don't know that they're connected. But at this point, it wouldn't surprise me. And it's not surprising me at all that the media refuses to even touch these stories because they don't want people to realize just what a threat the environmental radicalists have become and would rather the government go along with their agenda and blame you, me, and Donald Trump. Now, I want to tell you about something you don't have to blame for. That's your dirty air in your house. You can clean it up. You can get rid of the odors with the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. They're bringing back their famous buy one, get one free sale on their Eden Pure Thunderstorm air purifier. They've sold over 120,000 of these in county. You guys have bought a lot. People rave about it. They love it. It gets rid of odors. It kills mold and mildew. It freshens the air. It starts working in a matter of minutes to cleanse the air in your house and start you breathing better. And there aren't any costly air filters to replace. It saves you hundreds of dollars a year because you don't have to worry about those. Find out what you've been missing. Get a thunderstorm for yourself. Give one as a gift. Eden Pure guarantees the thunderstorm to get rid of any odor or your money back. You got nothing to lose. And right now, Eden Pure is offering a BOGO. Buy one, get one to my listeners this week only. That's right. You buy one, you get one free. Pet odors, kitchen odors, tobacco odors, basement smells, they're gone in no time with the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. What you do is you go to EdenPureDeals.com. You click on my name, Eric Erickson. And at checkout, you put in the code word Eric BOGO, Eric B-O-G-O, all one word. That's EdenPureDeals.com. The code word is Eric BOGO, E-R-I-C-K-B-O-G-O, all one word. Now, these are going to sell out. This is a deal this week only. Shipping is free. Buy one Eden Pure Thunderstorm. Get a second one free with the discount code Eric BOGO. This hour of the program brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan. FirstLibertyGA.com is their website. If your business wants to grow anywhere in the United States of America and you need access to large loans, reach out to First Liberty. They want to help you get to yes, where so many banks are saying no right now. It's FirstLibertyGA.com. Have y'all noticed? I saw this weekend. First of all, I saw a progressive professor talking about how he's just sinking into despair over COVID, that the last 3 months have been worse than the first 3 months. And then there's a poll out, I want to say it's by Pew, that shows the unvaccinated in this country are living their best life now, and the vaccinated are the ones with all the worries and fears. It's no way to live. And I'm kind of perplexed by all of this, that there are so many people out there who are overwhelmed with COVID and they've got the vaccine. Go live your life. Go live your life and stop being miserable. I don't understand the people who are sinking into despair now over the vaccine. I mean, this has a lot to do with where you live and who you surround yourself with. Here in Georgia, you would barely even know there's a virus, except in a lot of restaurants and grocery stores, the staff are wearing masks. For a while there, for several weeks there, a lot of people were wearing masks, but now again, it started to fade. For a while at our church, they were asking people to please be conscious of the virus. And if you're coming to indoor church, they had an outdoor service and an indoor service. If you're in the indoor service, wear a mask, and that's faded again. And life has gone on. My kids have been in school since August and have not worn masks. They haven't had an outbreak. Most of the it's a devoutly Christian school. Most of the upper school kids have been vaccinated. My kids as well. The virus isn't spreading. My wife just got her booster. I mean, things are looking good for us. About the only place I have to wear a mask now is when I go to my office. They make you wear a mask there, so I don't go. but I mean, I if I got to, I do. But if I'm down in my office where nobody exists other than me, I can roam around the hall without a mask on right by my immediate office to go to the bathroom and back. But the whole thing just seems that the people sinking in despair over the virus, we're actually, you know what? If you live in a red state, the economy's doing well. Jobs are coming back. Life seems to be good. The hardest thing is just the stuff on the grocery store shelves. There are still shortages out there that are just weird shortages to have to explain. And part of that is the supply chain issue that we will talk about when we come back.